Let me begin from the beginning. My name is Mordechai Willig. It's my pleasure to speak before this audience in person, as well as those who are watching from afar. Our topic today is halacha and secular law. That they should somehow cherish and uplift the laws of the non-Jews. Not only is that prohibited, it's even prohibited to go before a secular judge or court where you know they're going to judge in accordance with the laws of Israel. Now, the Rashba's Kal Vachomer, as we call it, is not necessarily compelling. One might argue that's a worse violation to go in front of a secular court, as it's a simple read, lefnei velo lefnei akum, as opposed to going in front of a bezdin, where the bezdin may apply secular laws, which we'll come to in a few moments. Maybe, right? Okay, skipping a few lines. Lilmo is the first word on the line. Lelech v'darchi adoyim v'shbatem, chas v'sholom li'am kodosh lino kocha. I need to translate chas v'sholom. God forbid that we should actually follow this. The kol shekhen, even more so, if ata yosifu lachto lako nachlo, they're coming to uproot the laws of inheritance. Apparently, the laws of inheritance have a special status, as we shall see soon. Someone who relies on this very, very weak rod, and does these things, mapil chomos haTorah, is knocking down the walls of Torah, and is uprooting roots and branches, and the Torah will come after him. V'yomani, I say, someone who thinks it's permissible because of the famous rule of Dina de Machusa Dina, Toe is mistaken, Vigazlanhu, and he is a simple thief. But besides from being a thief, next line, Uvichlal Oker Kol Dine HaTorah Ashlema, he is uprooting the entire Torah. Umalanu L'Sifri HaKodesh HaMekudashim Shechiv Ulonu Rebbe Vachrof Rabbeinu Rav Ashi. Why should we study the Torah, the Gemara, and the Mishnah? Yilamdu as b'neim dinei agoyim. It's a polemic. Teach your kids the laws of the non-Jews. Yivnu lehem bomos tluas v'batei midrasei agoyim. And they go to the study halls of the non-Jews to study their law. Cholila, forbid, God forbid, lo teikas os b'Yisrael chas v'shalom, shematachar ha-Torah sak aleim. Wow, this is powerful stuff. The Rashba didn't hold back. He was quite critical of individuals who were doing something which he was critical of. Now, what exactly were they doing? That's the topic of today's Shia. Something bad was happening over here, but what exactly was it, and how does it apply to us in the real world of 2019? That is the topic of today's Shia. Okay? Let's now try to figure out what's happening over here. This is what the Rashba said. Let's now turn our pages to the next part of the sources. Okay, and see how we can find the important things. Let us first read source number 2. Hanose Isha b'mokom shedonim b'dini akum, u'meisa ishta. Person marries a woman in a place where they typically will follow the laws of the nations, and his wife dies. Lo yuchal avi ishta o shari o shea lomar. That's exactly the case that the Rashba began with. Source, Beis Yosef Chavav, Chuvas Rashba. 100%, true. Taxes, which is needed for the people of the nation. Avalosh Yudona Bedina Yaakov all the time. This is exactly what the Rashba said. Okay, let us now turn to the next page. Question becomes, when do we and when we do not apply the law of the land? It's a very, very important question to try to understand. So, we have the following case, which is source number 5. Pasuk of Yitzchak ber Peretz. Yisrael ha-malvo li-Yisrael chaver al-ha-mashkom. A Jew lends money to another Jew, and there's a mashkom, collateral. Ein ha-malvo zokok l'shom yosef mishona, mil-mocho v'ligvos ha-vaso gedina demachusa, kavimavam lo v'kachavim beribis. What is he saying? You only have to keep the collateral for a year. Why? Dina demachusa. Apparently you apply Dina demachusa in certain cases. Six, the Rambam quotes this. Yeshama de b'mokom sha'minig sha'malva la'akum lo yuchal l'mokho l'poros mishona. Don't again became be Yisrael. Shilu chaveh ala mashkom. Da'az lina b'zeh. Here's the key word. The key word. Achar ha'minhog. We follow the custom. Oh, wait a minute. The Rasha was screaming and yelling. If you follow the custom, you're terrible. And here, the Rambam is saying, you follow the custom. It's clearly a problem. How do you reconcile these two sources, which seem to be completely at odds with one another? This is a very serious question. A very serious question. Okay. How do you answer this question? Very serious question. So, in order to begin to understand this, let us turn our attention to source number 8. Source number 8, we read from the Shach, the famous commentary on the Kosher Mishpat. It's trying to resolve some of these problems. This is the first line. We know only applies Hanol LeMelech, as we saw the Ramah a while ago. Okay? And then he reads as follows. Third line. Actually, fourth line. Only Hanol LeMelech Hatikah Menei Medina. Masa mata. Avol shar dinim, listen carefully. Dine Torah ha-mufursamim beinenu. The famous laws of the Torah. He's divided the laws of the Torah to the famous ones and the not so famous ones, which is an interesting distinction. If it's famous, kagon, hey machshirim eid echad, afilu korav apostle, which we don't accept one witness or a relative or someone who's somewhat disqualified. V'chayotzim et v'ram elu. Dinim pratim shebein Yisrael lechavero, pshita shlo nadin behem kamosa. We clearly not going to follow the non-Jewish law. Dim lochem batul chas v'shom kodine Yisrael, a phrase lifted from the Rashba. V'chein hano se ishe b'malkam shedonin dine goyim u'mesa, ein yecholim eyor shalom al kodno se isha hadas ha-minik u'ose. Da poshet b'inenu, da baal yorosh es ishto. In other words, if it's famous, we follow Jewish law. Not so famous, we don't follow Jewish law. Sounds very strange. Whether it's famous or not famous. What's this all about? It's hard to understand this. Hard to understand this. So, if you look a little bit further, the underlined section of number 9, the Chenani Omer, this is quoted from the Ravid. No less the sources of the Ravid, one of the great Rishonim. Shendino mafur choldava shendino mafur shetzleinu veinlanu bominig yadua. When it's not clear and explicit in our code books, and there's no well-known custom, shaholken ba'acham minagel shalahem shekarav davazeh ledina demachus adina veimdonim apira minagus. End quote. This is a very, very important citation. What it means is that Dina de Machusa Dina in and of itself is very limited. Limited to cases of taxes for the benefit of the government or other such limited cases of Takanas B'nei HaMedina. However, there's a much larger group of cases where we don't function as Dina de Machusa qua Dina de Machusa, but rather the Dina de Machusa determines what the Minhag is. I repeat, it's not Dina de Machusa Dina as such, but typically the minhag, the custom arises to follow the minhag HaMedina. And when is this the case? Says the Shach, it depends. If Jewish law is well known, everybody knows what the Jewish law has to say about this, then certainly in those days, the custom was to follow the well-known Jewish law. However, if Jewish law is not well known, is not well known, doesn't mean to say that Jewish law has no answer. The Chazon Ish accused the Shach of saying it's a case where Jewish law has no resolution. It's Chas V'Shalom. Every case has a resolution of Jewish law. After just dig harder to find it. That's not what the Shach meant. Because according from the Rabbi, the Rabbi's an impeccable source. If it's clear what Jewish law has to say, he gave two examples, then the typical Jew is going to follow the simple law he learned in Cheder, in grade school. He knew what the Jewish law had to say. He goes to Shul on Shabbos and reads the Chumash. He knows what it says. So he's going to utilize that law, which he knows very well, in his financial dealings. But what if it's a more complicated, nuanced Jewish law? He doesn't know about that. Sure, a great man, a Gadol B'Torah, can figure it out. Not the average Jew. So in those cases where the average Jews are unaware of the true resolution according to the depth of Jewish law, what typically happens is they will customarily follow the Dina de Mahusa. Not because Dina de Mahusa Dina. Does not apply. It works through custom. The custom is to follow the Dina de Mahusa. This is what the Shach is teaching us based upon the Rivet. This is a very, very important distinction which applies even to this day. Now, you have to go a little bit further. The source number 7. Going a little bit backwards, I'm sorry. Source number 7. This is the case we saw earlier. A person married a woman, they followed the Dibur Goyim. We can't say, we saw in the Rashba. The Yom Toma, listen to this now. A contradiction within the Ramah himself. Hakosel Moram, that's the Ramah, in Reish Mem Ches as follows. Listen very carefully to the words now. Line 2 of Source 7. Im Osa Tzavo, a man wrote a will. B'makam Shenagu Ladun B'dina Goyim, in a place where the custom was to follow the non-Jewish law. Ubo Achakat Ladun B'dina Yisrael, and later they came to judge to a Bezdin. Lo Arminan, the Yerusha Ein Lo Hefsek. You do not say that. Rather, what do you say? Yadunu b'dinei agoy. So wait a minute. In Shin Samach Tes, the Ramah writes, a person says that although Jewish law tells us that the husband inherits the wife, I don't want to follow Jewish law. I want to follow the non-Jewish law. We disregard him, as per the Rashba. Yet, in Siman Reish Memches, when a man writes a will, suddenly the Ramah turns around and says, we do follow the customary non-Jewish law. Contradiction. V'yesh lomer. This is the fourth line. Source 7. Tashani hosam kevan shamitzavet meis v'yosam mokom shedonim v'dine goyim asa tzavo stam bachav leploni. He's in a place writing a will where this is the custom. Because when he wrote the will, he knew exactly what he was doing, was thinking about exactly this. We read his mind that he meant exactly what the custom was in that time and place. Masha enken kan. Bahano se isha. The Bishah Shanisu says that at the moment that they married one another, Lo Hoya Shah Sayarusha, it was not the time of inheritance. For Lo Hoya Oz Shumgilu Das Shinisa Adata de Minhava. There was no indication what he planned to do about Yerusha. And the Baal says now, Lo Hoya Sadata was Lisa Das Shim Thomas Lo Yerushena. So, Bavarelo Okri Dinei Torah. What is he saying? He's saying you have to go into the mindset of the person. If the person is explicitly thinking to do something which is different than the laws of the Torah, then, at least in limited cases, we follow it. But we have no right to assume that an individual who is not thinking about this case at all at the present time is thinking to go against the laws of the Torah. Ladies and gentlemen, I assume that the majority of the people in this room are married. Is that correct? An honest question now. When you were under the chuppah, such a dramatic, happy time, do you think about the Arusha? I sure hope not. I sure hope not. And therefore, we're not going to say, well, he was thinking about this. Will the Yerusha go with the Jewish law, with the non-Jew? What Yerusha? He's 22 years old, and she's 21. They want to live another 100 years. What Yerusha? He's thinking about Yerusha. They're thinking maybe how they're going to build their home, how they're going to raise their children, will they live in Tidak or not? That's what they're thinking about. But not thinking about Yerusha. And therefore, we follow the laws of the Torah, which is, of course, the default position in all such circumstances. This is how the Smar reconciles Shin Samach Tes with Reish Mem Ches. Fine. It's very, very important to understand this. My friends, a Dayan and a Haredi Bezdin, not our Bezdin, once suggested to me that, you know, in your world, he said, in the modern Orthodox world, perhaps we should employ in a Bezdin, if they come to us, what they call today equitable distribution. That means that if there's a divorce, they should divide their assets in an equitable way, which is not exactly 50-50, but sometimes close to it, even though according to the laws of the Torah, it's not that way. I said, why? He said, well, because they're in a modern world, and in the modern world, they're very often employing secular law. I said, I think you're wrong. Why? Because when they're sitting under the chuppah, they're not thinking about, if they get divorced, how they're going to divide their property. Not thinking about Yerusha, not thinking about divorce. I sure hope not. And therefore, I disagreed with him. I said, when they come to you, you should pass it according to Jewish law. Unless there's a carve-out. As we'll get to that a little bit later, they said explicitly before they got married, they want to be bound by equitable distribution. We'll get to that in a few moments. Okay, fine. So let's just bring that up at the present time. As a matter of fact, you'll be hearing later from the president of our Bezdin, Tinek resident, Benjamin Kamenetsky. I'm proud that he's a Talmud of mine from way back when in the yeshiva. He's going to talk about some of the legal problems, solutions with respect to the prenup. I was happy to see that in the packet that you had, they have a case in Maryland where I was upheld in a particular detail of the prenup. It's nice to read again. I hadn't seen it in quite a number of years. The question was as follows. The prenup, as you know, is a device which we hope will eliminate, to the best of our ability, some of the terrible aguna problems that we face. There were some women who refused to sign it. Women, primarily to protect them. You know why? They felt, I want to go to the secular court, because there I can enjoy the, in case Chas V'Shalom what happens, I can have the greater financial benefit in the secular court, because of the secular law of equitable distribution, as opposed to the laws of the Torah, which I will not do as well. So we asked Rabbi Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, who was the main rabbi who helped us in the prenup going back to the early 90s, may we put that into the document? That the parties agree that they will, in fact, if it comes to it, that the Bezdin, not the court, can't go to court, that the Bezdin will divide the assets in accordance to the laws of New York State or New Jersey. He said, fine. And he actually printed it. He printed it in Yeshurun a number of years ago. Chelik Yod Aleph, page Tof, Reish Ches Tzadi. He printed it. However, he did say, it's a Chiddush. Sounds like it's going against his Rashba, right? Sounds like it at first glance. Maybe we should better do something which is not explicitly referring to the laws of any particular state. So instead of referring to the laws of New York State, which is equitable distribution, or California, which is community property, 50-50. In our initial iteration, we wrote just equitable distribution or community property. We referred to something called the UCC or something which is not the law in any of the states of the United States, just in general terms. That's been tweaked a little bit. Now we have only one option, which is also not according to any law of any state, that the Bezdin can take into account, if they so feel appropriate, equitable distribution. Nothing of any law, but he said you could put in the law of a particular state. There's nothing wrong with it. You're allowed to do it. That's what he felt. Others disagree. I will say that a case I believe my esteemed colleague Rabbi Reese, who we presented later, was involved in. This was the source of a heated debate amongst the Dayanim, a principal debate if I'm not mistaken, and then I think it was the state of Ohio, was it Ohio? Illinois, one of those states in the Midwest, where they wrote in explicitly that they want their financial issues to be dealt with according to the laws of a particular state. And I believe that Rabbi Reese thought it should be perfectly acceptable, as per Rabbi Nechemia. And a different judge said, no way, this is the Rashba. I refuse to rule this way. I refuse to sign the document. He was very principled, and I understand where he's coming from. He thought that according to the Rashba, this is Akiras Kol HaTorah Kula. It would be a terrible travesty to allow yourself to be judged by the laws of the land, even if it's explicitly stated. So the rest of my shiur, I'm going to try to explain why I think it's not a travesty. I think the Rashba will agree. And this is all a question of how you read the words of the Rashba. It's very, very, very important. Number one, the Rashba, as we already saw, said the problem is if you are copying the laws of the land. And therefore, I believe it would be a problem, I concede, a potential problem, to write in the document of arbitration that you're going to, or your contract, whatever you have with the other party, that the law of the land will govern whatever the law of the land says. Remember, you're starting in 2019. The dispute could be in 2050. It could be 30 years down the road that they have a dispute. The law of the land could change 10 times between now and then. You want to be bound by the law of the land, which is an unknown to you right now. That's a problem. Because then you just hook, line, and sinker. You're saying that the law of the land is superior to the laws of the Torah. I don't know what it is. It could change in a moment. That's a potential problem. However, if you are referring to a specific law, one law, that's a different story. This law, instead of referring to the law that you could have done, is taken a pen and gone to the law book and copied out that paragraph and say, I want our relationship to be governed by these and these details. That's fine, right? To save time, you refer to section A, B, or C in a particular state's law book. That seems to be much more acceptable. Remember, when the Rashba and all of his polemic was saying, if you're going to follow the laws of the land, all the laws of the Torah are nullified. That's only true if you take it wholesale, all the laws of the land. If you take a particular law, one law of the land, instead of writing it out long and you say, refer to a particular law book, this seems to be not included in the Rashba's critique. That's number one. But number two, I have to tell you that I found something which has not been noted by many of those who analyze the Rashba, and that is that unfortunately, I'm using that term in an interesting way, the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, did not quote the entire case. He quotes the Rashba, but there are whole chunks missing. Let's review the case that we saw in the Beis Yosef. There were only a total of three parties. A man, his daughter, and his son-in-law. That's it. So it's all we saw in that source. Source number one. And then unfortunately the daughter died. And the question is, what happens to her possessions? By Jewish law it goes to the husband. By non-Jewish law it goes back to the father. And the Rashba says, you have to follow Jewish law. Can you have a condition? No condition. Goes back and forth. But that's half the case is missing. Take a look at source number 10. You have the Rashba in its entirety. Tells you the whole story. Take it from the top. Page 5. Ruvain tells you where it took place. Ruvain hasias bito Leah the Shimon. So far it's the same. And he gave the dunya. Now a new party exists. Vyodo lo bas. This bas never appeared in source number 1. It took till source number 10 for this daughter to appear. It's the same case. A daughter now. It's the fourth person. V'chakat meisa leya. The daughter died. V'achazman meisa gamkin abbas shel yodolo. The granddaughter died. Achshav omad ruvein. V'tova v'dinei ha-goyim. She'yav shelo also moman ha-nedun yishichnis lo im leya bito. He wants the money back. Even though bal yorosh is ishto. V'ho'av es bito v'dinei yisro. Now there are two separate instances over here. One is that the husband inherits the wife. The second, that the father inherits the daughter. Toin miyomer, ein lochush nirushas abal, keman shakol yodim, shem holchim, medine agoyim, He's referring to the first question about the husband inheriting, and there he wants to follow the custom, skipping a few lines. The sixth line, middle of the line. Vayirushas ha'av v'nichse ha'bas. Ah, now discussing the fact that typically a father inherits a daughter. What's his claim here? Toei shamelech chokak b'nimusav shekol shiyomus avlat tov zman yodua shimashiyesh l'mitzara'eim l'yorshia'eim v'dine demachus adina. As far as the daughter's money going to her father instead of the grandfather, he invokes dina demachus adina. You see, two separate claims over here. One is following a minute, as far as the Yerusha is about, and with respect to the daughter, Dina de Machus Adina as such. Tshuva. He starts off by saying, Kol Dava Shebe Mamon Tuno Kayim. And as Yerushalmi, there's no problem. Mamon Kayim. And I add, he says, also over there by the Beis Yosef, Kol Mokom Shenogu Lahasos Velasos Kazet Tnai, Afilu Hanosim Shem Stam, Gova Me'em Emesim Lo Bonim, That's the custom among the Jewish people there. Fine. So therefore he's saying, if the condition was made, the condition is valid. The bottom line, in the case in point, the condition is valid. And then he goes into his whole polemic, which we saw in Beis Yosef. This should not be done. The copy of the Goyim shouldn't do it. Torah shouldn't follow what they're doing. And therefore, he doesn't understand how you allow this to happen in your place. And then he says, I'm just skipping a few lines. Alkein on Tol Tumayin, Mokam Avishpat Beirchem, Mokam Torah, V'Yisron Das, Echnos Tu Yad, the Klal, Devarim, Elu, Shasros, and Torah, Shleim, Mashtonah. So the copy of the non-Jewish law, wholesale, you're not to do. What will you gain if you inherit the money which is not in conjunction, complying with the laws of the Torah? Fine. Skipping a few more lines. Now, skipping about 10 lines. The kosh game, im ata yosifu lachto, now, a totally new situation. Until now, he's discussing the fact that although the husband inherits a wife by Torah law, they made a condition, explicit or implicit, to the contrary. That condition, listen carefully, please, is valid. Yerushalmi says it's valid. What he does not like is, if you're going to accept the laws of the non-Jews wholesale. But in the particular case, we made a condition on one simple law, that instead of the husband inheriting, the father should inherit. That is binding, and the bezin is required to paskin that way, even though it's against the laws of the Torah, either explicit or an implicit condition, because that was their custom. Because you understand very well, when it comes to here, kol tanai shebemamon kayim, any condition works. But there's a very important exception to the rules of kol tanai shebemamon kayim. A very important exception. The exception is Yerusha, laws of inheritance. The Rambam teaches us that the laws of inheritance are called in the Torah chukas mishpat. It's the combination, it's the interface of mishpat, which is purely monetary, and chukos, which means isur v'heter. The Torah's rules and regulations, you're required to follow the system of the closest relative inheriting. It's not discussing the husband. The husband's not related. Not from birth. And therefore his Yerusha might be purely rabbinic. Maybe even the Rabbanan, the whole idea of the husband inheriting. Whether rabbinic or by Torah law, it's its own unique case. And in that case, the condition does work. But to say that instead of the son inheriting, the brother inherits, you are not only you're not allowed to do it, you cannot do it. It won't work. It's an exception to the rule of kol tanai shebemamon kayim. It's not viewed as purely monetary. There's an Easter Veheta component, Chukas Mishpat. And therefore, look what he writes now. Lako Nachas Aval Abanim. And then he comes with the entire polemic. Mapuchomas Torah. That Torah Miyoda Tevakash, the money is not his. It's Torah Vigazlanu. In the first half, there's no Gazlan. There's no claim of a thief. No one stole anything. The money, in fact, belongs to the individual, to the father, not to the husband, notwithstanding the halacha that goes to the husband, because they made a condition, explicit or implicit. Again, to adopt the entire legal system would be terrible. But to make a particular condition on this one law, and even if you did it in the context of a full embracing of non-Jewish law, you violated something, but the condition with respect to the inheritance is, in fact, binding. He never said you're a thief, as far as that's concerned. Because he knows, they did it in Yerushalmi. They did it. See, they did it explicitly or implicitly. The money, in fact, belongs to the father and not to the husband, notwithstanding Jewish law. It's only in the second case where the discussion is the fact that the father inherits the daughter. There, the Rashba writes, if you insist on doing it differently, you're a thief, because this condition cannot work. He says, Gzele Yoshev, it's considered to be Gzele. And he adds, for good measure, those who are following in, where it says, Daf Samach on the base in parentheses, Im Nomakeh, Butle Yerushas B'no Abchor, the Kolan Naklos. Everything to be bottled, the whole Pasha of Naklos, which you haven't saved him a minute, bottle. V'tire Shabbasim Abonim, and daughters will inherit with sons, which was the custom of the Tzdukim. As an aside, I cannot leave this out. It's important. I wrote a piece, you can get it at Torah Web, called Inheritance Without a Fight. I know we have a very distinguished attorney here in this area here in present, where I advocate that in today's world, an individual should write a will where he gives all of his children equally. Sons, daughters, Bukhar, non-Bukhar, to avoid fights. I know what the Rashba just said, and I'm fully aware what he said. Read the piece, you'll see that I have a good company. The Gesher Achaim, Tukachinsky wrote, was an individual who insisted on having the Torah's way. Bukhar gets double, and daughters get nothing. And what happened in his house? Fights, terrible fights. People said it would be better off dying penniless, because the whole family broke apart over this. And that's why I believe strongly in that, but that's not our discussion for today. But I didn't want to leave this without an explanation. Okay, let's go. Maybe our next CLE, we'll talk about that, if I'm invited. Okay. Uvichalokah kol dinei haTorah shleima. Umalana v'sifrei haKodesh haMekdoshim. Yeah, just teach the... This is all this... All about the fact that you're stealing, because Yerusha is not given to conditions to the contrary. Doesn't work. It doesn't work. Doesn't work at all. Okay? Any of these is, let's just turn to the next page. My time is almost up. I just want to finish up and then summarize. Watch how the Rashba ends the truth. So that's number six. I mean, page number six, I should say. Now watch. This is as follows. The last few lines. He says, some say Dina Damachusa Dina, Gemara Mesechta Gittin. Af al pishim mitzad Dina HaMelech en amol kevan she matona hebo toeles lamelech kevan she ze mitaito osa matnoso be'akos habe kibol alov lelech be'ze Dina HaMalchus shoma kol shtar shiyala be'akos she'ov yikne uvedobe she be'mamon yochol l'shabir atzmo v'liten shalom Mishalosh Shalom and Adin, Masa Shamachin Lios Keshoel, and therefore it works. To the bottom line of the Rashba, it really does work. So what's the answer? Is it contradictory? No. It works in all cases, including Yerusha Sabal, because that's given to a Tanai. The only time he said it doesn't work and you're a Gazan is with respect to the Yerusha of a father of the possessions of his daughter. There the Tanai doesn't work. See, he sees explicitly. You makabal dinei amalchus. Not you will makabal a particular law. You makabal it qua dinei amalchus. It still is effective. because it works in all situations except for Yerushas Habas. There it does not work. There it does not work. However, there's one important situation in which a Bezin should really not be employing secular law. I believe that you were given a beautiful article by Rabbi Yaakov Feit about prohibition that's going to secular courts. It starts on page 30. I'm going to refer you only to one point on page 41. Don't have it? Oh, I'm so sorry.
We'll email it out.
I'm sorry. Should have had it. Okay, I'll read it to you from this. Please, when you get the email, you'll see what I'm reading is in fact here. And in fact, Rabbi Feit refers to an article written by our own Rabbi Yonah Ries on this particular subject. The Rashba is referring to a situation where the person accepts the law of the land without even knowing what it is, as I mentioned to you earlier. Thinks their laws are better than our laws. If you accept a particular law, because this law reflects your way of doing business. It's minhag ha-socharin. A person is permitted to accept a particular law which is on the books right now, but he's not permitted to accept the law of the land in general. That you may not do. Now, you take a look at the last source over here on page 6, the Tumim, in Sivkot on Dal. Please pay attention to this final source. It's Sarat Loma, first line of the source. Devarayim hisnake b'shoa shenofo b'neim divrei ribin. Now that they're fighting, they decide to be judged by the next secular law. Pshitad lo mahani tznai b'kinyin labo din Torah. No. You have to follow the Torah's law. Rak hu kosev ke mitchila beis ksivas hashtar b'kinyin suda l'dibidun Yaakov. If at the beginning, when the two people establish a financial relationship, whatever, in real estate, whatever it may happen to be, they say if there's going to be an altercation, we want that secular law should be utilized. No, he doesn't want to follow Avodah Zarah, to follow the non-Jewish law. He wants that a particular law of the land should apply in this particular case. So therefore, if they make this condition in their original arbitration or original contract agreement, then the Bezdin will in fact employ the secular law in its deliberations. However, if there's no such original understanding, it just was blank, so the presumption is going to follow Jewish law. Now the last minute, having a fight, they want to employ secular law, then our Bezdin will not accept that. And I'm reading from Rabbi Feit's article. A choice of a law clause where two parties agree to be judged in Bezdin but according to the laws of a specific secular set of rules or authority is permitted by many halachic authorities. The Bezdin of America generally respects choice of law clauses and will apply secular law in determining the outcome of a dispute where parties have agreed to be governed by that body of law. That means they agreed at the very beginning that this is the understanding of their financial relationship. But not in the case in which they're going to, at the last minute, decide they want that, but that's considered to be Yad Hashem. Let me just summarize. The issue of utilizing non-Jewish law in a Bezdin is quite complex, not simple. We saw what the Rashba said, how the Rashba is interpreted by many. We saw that it may depend on whether the individual who was making this choice was thinking about this topic right now, such as a case where he's writing a will, he's thinking about the will, as opposed to an individual who's getting married, where, as we said, he's not thinking about what's going to happen with any inheritance or any divorces, and therefore, in that kind of a case, as the Sma points out, we follow Jewish law, unless it's explicitly said otherwise. In our prenup, for reasons which you mentioned earlier, there was an option that the Bezdin should take into account the secular law, which is considered to be We use the word equitable distribution. That's typically what people from our world have in the back of their heads. But the best is giving some free rein, take it into account. Doesn't mean I have to follow it completely. It's in our most recent iteration, it's a really pretty gives broad-based powers to the Bezin to decide what they think is the most proper law to apply. As we said before, Kondem Zav and Nechem Yigobi can even write in explicitly the law of a particular land as of today, not as of when the dispute takes place. If you look more carefully in the Rashba, you get an interesting result, which is the Rashba says explicitly that accepting even the law of the land works, and the Bezin must follow the law of the land if it is accepted by the parties. To accept it wholesale is a violation, but it's nonetheless binding. The case in which the Rashba said that it's not binding and it's theft and the whole Torah is being uprooted is only in the case of Yerusha's Habas, where the father is getting the money from his daughter and you want to give it to somebody else. That you may not go against all the laws of Yerusha is actually considered theft. Now, once again, repeat my aside, that's what my strict law. I believe that today, because of the changing times to avoid fights, individuals, aside from writing a typical will, have to include an additional document called we term it a shtar chatzi zachar. This is a loose term, which the Rambam already approved of hundreds of years ago, which will make the secular will binding in halacha. And I advocate, to avoid fights, that they in fact do what the Rashba said you shouldn't do, which is give to the daughters as well as the sons, and not give to the oldest son any more money. Just end with a personal note. After my mother passed away, my father said, I have to rewrite the will. I happen to be a bchor. I'm a firstborn. He wants to give me pish 9. He wants to give me double, which is what says in the Torah. I said, Abba, I've been around. Please don't give me a penny more than anybody else. You have 4 children. You have 2 sons and 2 daughters. Give everybody exactly the same thing, and there'll be shalom. Be no problem. There's more to be said, but my time is up. Thank you very much for listening.